You're listening to Hearing Our Heritage, the podcast where we preserve the voices and stories of the older generation and make them accessible to younger ears. We pay tribute to those who have paved the way and learn from their lived experiences. I'm your host, Katie Pierce.
Betty Ray Adamson Brown. I was born September 13th, 1943 in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Betty Brown is a beautiful, caring, selfless woman who has dedicated her life to raising her family and doing what is right. She has a lovely perspective on facing hard times, following the Lord, and loving others. She was raised in Utah, where she had good friends and neighbors who helped her along her way. She later met and married her sweetheart, Doug, and together they had two children, Christy and Brian, and they later helped raise their nieces, Tamara and Lena. Betty's story is full of happiness and good experiences, starting from her childhood, being brought up by wonderful parents.
Dad was a carpenter. My dad was very handy, and he built a swing. It was in the backyard, and it was a very big swing. And I remember swinging a lot. There were two swings, so it was pretty wide. And then it had bars that you could do tricky bar stuff. And I'd get in there and I'd swing as high as I could go and sing at the top of my lungs. I just loved music. My dad was an excellent singer and my mom was a homemaker. My grandpa had R.G. Adamson and Sons building, and then they had a store where they sold lumber, and the shop had paints and wallpaper and that kind of stuff, home stuff. My mom and sisters-in-law would all take turns working in that store on occasion. It wasn't a full-time job. It was just as needed. I had two sisters, Nancy and Shirley, 4 years between each one of us. I'm the oldest. I was the one that set the example, and then Nancy got sick with rheumatic fever. And so I was the babysitter for my sister Shirley, while Nancy was at Primary Children's Hospital and in and out. And by then, I think I was about 13. A lot more responsibility put on me. Nancy and I shared a bedroom. Someone gave her a little bell so Nancy could call my mom wherever mom was. I remember one day Nancy started ringing the bell and my mom just burst into tears. I can't stand that anymore. It was pretty hard on her. And Shirley, Nancy and I looked a lot alike. Dark hair, brown eyes. Shirley was blonde and blue-eyed. And she loved butter. She'd climb up on the table. There was always a butter dish on the table and salt and pepper. Always. She'd climb up on the table and eat the butter all the time. And we had to have Meadow Gold milk because that's what Shirley drank. Went to school, began at Sherman Elementary, which is no longer. It was on 23rd East and about 33rd South. And my dad would take me to school. And one day I decided I did not want to be at school. And so I walked home. Well, I was only in first grade and I was very tiny. My parents had a fit when I walked in the door, but I never missed school again. I don't remember being spanked. I never did that again. My dad, on his days off, loved to go fishing. So we'd go up the canyons fishing until they built the cabin up in Soapstone, Utah. My dad built it. My grandpa did the brickwork for the fireplace. We called it the Adamson Cabin. It was my mom and dad's cabin. And when my cousins started going up there and taking girlfriends with them, and they drink beer or drink, and mom and dad would go up on the weekends and they'd spend the weekend cleaning the cabin. And dad said no more of that. And so it was sold because my cousins abused it. But every weekend was canyons. And I remember one Easter going to the cabin, and the snow was so deep, we'd take a step and sink to our waists hiking into the cabin. And when we got there, I had brand new Levi's. I think it was the first time I'd ever worn Levi's. And my legs were dyed blue from the wet Levi's. Lagoon Day was important. Scott's Day at Lagoon was always important because my dad's family came from Scotland. The bagpipers would come through. My dad loved to watch the drummer twirl his, what are they called, drumsticks. But that was our big outing. Once a year, we'd get to go to Lagoon on Scott's Day.
Many of Betty's favorite childhood memories revolve around her mom and her dad.
They were very loving. My dad smoked, and he'd lay on the floor and blow smoke rings, and I'd sit on his chest and poke my finger through the smoke rings. But he loved his girls and was very protective of us. Mom was quiet, not loving or outgoing as much as my dad. My dad would put his arm around anybody, girl, call her honey. And when he was in the army and my mom was following him around before he went overseas, we stayed with some people and they had two daughters. And my dad would always put his arms around them and call them honey. They loved it until they found out he was LDS and they was afraid he was looking for more wives. They were babysitters on occasion, but after that, didn't have much to do with us. But Dad was always fun and outgoing. Mom liked to read. She was very, very quiet. I would say I had a happy childhood. We used to sit on the front porch and watch the fireworks on the 4th of July. And then the Dunyans built their house and it blocked our view. But I got to be really good friends with Dennis and Jerry Dunyan across the street. In the summertime, we'd start at the side of my garage, down the driveway, across 27th East, down their garage, and around to the back of their house. And in the wintertime, we do it with the sleds because it was always, always icy. They didn't plow the streets like they do now. And I remember Brother Dunyan deciding that we banged into his garage door one too many times, and that was the end of that. Spoiled all our fun. But we played together a lot. There weren't a lot of girls my age in our neighborhood. I just grew up with boys. My cousins my age are all boys, and so I was a tomboy. For Christmas, I got a BB gun, and that was okay. I was a pretty good shot. Birthdays were always a big deal. Growing up, it was a really big deal because my dad came from a large family, and all the aunts and uncles would get together at whoever's birthday house it was. Mom always made chow mein for dinner for birthdays, and my cousin Grant loved my mom's chow mein. He loved my mom's cooking and found reasons to come up and eat at our house. There was always a birthday cake and family. My mom was a voracious reader. One of the experiences that I was thinking of earlier today was going to the East Mill Creek Library. When I went to Sherman Elementary, we'd walk from Sherman Elementary down to the library. There was this series. I just remembered the heroine in the book was Marcia Schuyler. Don't remember the names of the books or anything, but I checked those out over and over again because I like to read. My mom, too, she liked to read.
A central part of Betty's life has been her membership in The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She was introduced to the church by her parents, but they didn't participate often.
They weren't very active. Dad liked to drink a lot. I remember him coming home and missing the garage and hitting the side of the garage. My cousin was sleeping over and the house shook. But Dad, being a carpenter, just fixed it. Nobody ever knew if they needed anything. When they built the new chapel, they called Dad. They knew they could count on him. Mom worked in the Relief Society. She was a secretary for a while. And Brother Dunyan was the one that baptized me. It was in the tabernacle on Temple Square, and that's where I was baptized, and I was 10. All my friends, all the kids my age, went to church, so I just went with my friends. Marcia Kimball was a couple of years younger than I was, but she and I were pretty close. She'd come down. She lived right on Evergreen Avenue. and I was on 27th East. And back then, there were no houses from our house to the mountains, and there were two ravines, one up by Marcia's house and one by my house. So we'd play in the ravines in the summertime because it was cooler, and we'd make doll clothes. I like to design doll dresses and dress my dolls up fancy. For me, I mean, I thought they were fancy. There was the comic books. Mom used to buy, we'd get comic books, and Marcia and I would share the comic books. Nancy and Sluggo and Aunt Fritz. We had, I think there were about 13 girls that were my age. We all went to East Mill Creek. Nadine Morris and Sherry Neff, Karen Seeley, Ann Schofield were all my age. I got to be friends with them. I just remember going to Evergreen Junior High. We'd walk, stop and pick up. Nadine was the first one. And by the time we got down there, we had quite a few. And my cousins went to Olympus. Had a cousin Judy, my cousin Marvin, Uncle Alex. And I had characters for family members that was fun.
Betty has lots of fond memories with her friends from her high school days.
Sundays, we'd always get together Sunday, and we'd have Sundays or make taffy, have a taffy pull, and we'd rotate houses. Usually it was at the Dunyans, not very often at my house because my dad smoked and my friends didn't like that, but that was okay. We call it the CTR, Chew the Rag Day, and I don't know, we just hung out a lot, found reasons to hang out a lot. But when we started dating, we didn't group date ever. There was always a fall dance, and then the homecoming, and then there was the winter dance and spring fling.
And for all those dances, Betty needed lots of dresses, many of which she made herself.
Well, I did take a sewing class when I was in junior high. But I had been sewing for a long time. I'm not even sure how I decided to learn how to. I just did it. There were no patterns. I'd create my own patterns. When I did make a really pretty brocade, gold brocade dress, and a jacket, a coat that went with it was brocade lined and black velvet. One of my favorite outfits to wear.
Along with her talent for sewing, Betty also loved to sing.
I liked to sing in the choir, but it was just a class I took. My dad was the singer, but I did like music. Played volleyball some. Fishing was my thing. And then I started working as a frost top, as a car hop.
During those fun, dance-filled high school days, Betty wasn't just spending time with her friends. She was also dating.
I met, say, Gary Richens, and we went steady. My dad would drop me off at school, and I'd walk down to Gary's house, and when he got home from work, he'd take me home. Gary played the saxophone, so when we'd go to dances, he would be playing, not dancing. So I'd sit on the sidelines and watch him play the saxophone. Mom and Dad promised me I'd have the biggest wedding this town had ever seen if I would go to 1 year of college. And so I thought, well, that's a deal. And when I went to college, I found that there were bigger fish in the sea.
That proved to be very true. And when Betty got up to the University of Utah, she was voted the cute youth.
I don't even know how that came about. I was probably dating a fellow that was in the engineering department at the time. I got the magazine copy. They came and took pictures of me, and I was in their engineering magazine.
Plus, many of her good friends from her younger years were also attending the U.
With the girls that I went to school with, we carpooled. I got a job at Sprouse Rights while I was up there. So it's a five and dime store. I was a clerk and kept the shelves neat and tidy. And there was a Catholic school not very far from it. But the kids would come in and we had to watch them because they shoplift. I started working at Valley Bank and Trust in the bookkeeping department. I wasn't a teller. I was downstairs in the dungeon. And I canceled a lot of answered the phone a lot. I was canceling checks, sitting at the canceling machine when President Kennedy was assassinated. It was a gloomy day. Someone at work just said, President Kennedy's been assassinated. It was a very traumatic day.
Very depressing feeling.
At least as far as I know, he was a very well-loved president.
It was during this time of her life that Betty met the man who would soon become her husband, Doug.
I belonged to Sacra Dulce Choir,
and we'd meet at,
it was called the Green Monster. It was a chapel, just a group of LDS kids that got together and practiced. And then we'd go around and sing in different wards. We'd take over the sacrament meeting, and we'd have outings, and we went water skiing at Bear River, and that's where I met Doug. He was wearing a red John L. Sullivan swimsuit, which came down to his knees, and a red shirt. He was a redhead. We had a fireside after. We were outside, I remember that, sitting on a hill, and I kept looking at Doug, and then I'd look away, and he said he was looking at me at the whole time, and I never looked at him, and I said, well, you never looked at me. So I was standing there. He said, can I walk you to your sleeping bag? Because everybody just slept on the beach. And I said, sure. And so we were walking along and waiting. There was a breaker that made a little kiddie pool kind of thing. And it was warm, and there were billions and billions of stars. It looked like you could just reach up and touch one of them. And we stopped to talk, and he bent down and kissed me. And I thought, what does he think he's doing? That was our first kiss. And then he asked me out, and we went. He lived with, they called it the bachelor apartment. It was a house in Sugar House, and they just rented it to single return missionaries. And he and two of his roommates got together and decided to take these girls out for a picnic up the canyon. The boys took care of everything. They had a tablecloth, and I think about it now, they probably couldn't afford paper plates, so we had real dishes and glasses and a barbecued steak. And from that date on, I didn't date anybody else.
There's one special thread in Doug and Betty's relationship from their first date to their young married years, and that's the VW bug.
He drove up in a brand new Volkswagen bug, and that bug took us on a lot of dates and took us to California when we moved to California and brought us back home with two kids. The engine was in the back, which they don't do now, but we put the baby in the back, behind the back seat. So they were on top of the engine and it was nice and warm. The baby would sleep back there, but I'd have to climb over the seats to get the baby. But I was young and spry then and could do that.
Betty recalled the cute story of how Doug asked her to be his wife.
I was working on some project. I remember Wizard of Oz was on TV that night, and he said, I need some ice. Would you help me go out and get some ice? And I thought, well, that's dumb. Go get it yourself, because I was busy. And he said, no, I want you to come out and get some ice with me. And he'd put the ring in the freezer. That was my ice. And that's how he proposed. Wedding day was January 29th. We had it at a reception center, and they filled the Volkswagen with rice. We were still finding rice the day we sold it. Could never get it all cleaned out. They really filled it. And because it was a Volkswagen, they picked it up and we couldn't leave.
Once the couple was married, they were off on their next adventure to California. This was an idea prompted by Doug's mission president. Doug served in the British mission, and it should be noted one of his companions was Jeffrey R. Holland.
President Marion D. Hanks was Doug's mission president, and he counseled us to move as far away from the in-laws as possible. And for us, that was California. President Hanks said move, so we moved. Had an aunt, an uncle that lived there, brother and sister. And Uncle Waldo lived in Huntington Beach, and Aunt Maudie and Uncle Merle lived in Pasadena.
You could see the Pasadena parade from their house. But Uncle Waldo, we stayed with him for a while, and he helped Doug find an apartment for us. It was called Torrance, California. We lived there, the upstairs apartment, for about a year and a half. And then a downstairs apartment became available, so we moved downstairs. By then we had Brian. The apartments had swimming pools. They were built around swimming pools. And I remember Brian going out and falling in the swimming pool one day. That was kind of not very good. It was really close to the ocean. On Doug's days off, we'd go to the beach. I didn't like it. I hated the sand everywhere. We had some friends that had a little boy the same age as Brian, and they had little something that you could ride on. It wasn't a bike or a trike, but they'd get on that and race down the hill to the doors that opened into the apartment complex and crash into the doors. We lived in the Lomita Ward, and there was a family that had a house. I think it must have been at Grandma's house. Grandma passed away, and we were able to move into a house. And it had avocado tree that was huge. I'd go out and check avocados every day, waiting for them to ripen. You have to pick avocados and let them ripen. They don't ripen on trees. Nobody told me that. And it had a tangerine tree and a rose garden and several other fruit trees. But the avocado tree was like the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse. It was huge.
One special moment for their family is when Doug, Betty, and Brian were sealed as an eternal family in the temple.
We came up from California. President Hanks was Doug's mission president. Doug had arranged for him to be the sealer. My Aunt Alice and Uncle Ken came from Lewiston, Utah, down. And I had a good friend, Donna Stewart, that came. He got on it at American Airlines. In fact, an interesting story. He'd been out job hunting and rejected and rejected. He was rejected from Disneyland because he'd had too many jobs. And I had been saving money since I was working, and all of that money was almost gone. And I didn't know what we were going to do. And I remember we had rented a furnished apartment, and they said, "We'll rent it to you unfurnished, but if someone wants furnished, you'll have to give up the furniture." And so that was okay. And then they rented a furnished apartment. So everything was gone. And I remember going, kneeling down in the bedroom, an empty bedroom, and just praying, "Help, help Doug get a job, help us." And Doug came home. We couldn't afford a phone. He got two telegraphs saying, "Please call this number." One was for American Airlines. I don't remember who the other one was, but the fellow that interviewed Doug said, "I couldn't get your smiling face out of my mind." And although he was balding, and they had what they called the look of the leader for American Airlines, and he didn't fit it because he was balding, they said, "If you'll just keep your hair short, not let it grow long on the sides, you're hired." He was a ticket agent. When American Airlines got the route into Salt Lake, we were able to move back home, because no one wanted to transfer where the Mormons lived. And although he was low in seniority, he got it. We called everybody we knew, and Doug's best friend growing up, Orson Kessler, said he was in sacrament meeting, and a lady got up and said her sister and husband had been called on a mission, and they needed to rent their house out. It was just perfect timing. So we were able to move into that house and rent it for 2.5 years while they were on their mission. When we got notification that they were moving back, we started house hunting. And that's when we found this house. And we walked in, and it was like someone had put a warm blanket around me. I knew we were home.
I asked Betty what her life was like staying home and taking care of her two young kids.
We read a lot of books. I remember Christy didn't like to take naps, and so I'd put her in bed, and then I'd have to lay on the floor so that when she got up, she'd have to stand on me to get out of bed. We'd read a lot of stories, go outside and play a lot. Brian, he started kindergarten in California, then we moved to East Midvale. He finished kindergarten and first grade, I think. They had open planning in East Midvale.
there were no doors on the classrooms, and it was based around a circle, and it was very noisy. And so when we moved here and Brian went to school, the first thing he said is, "It's quiet, Mom." Well, trips were always, when we were in California, it was always home. We'd come up twice a year for conference. Doug liked to get in the car and go someplace. I think about a lot lately. We'd just get in the car and go. And he knew. He didn't ever have to look at a map. Always, always up the canyon when the leaves were changing. That was a tradition. Christmases were big, have always been big. In fact, we've got a picture of presents from one end of the room to the other. You couldn't even walk in here.
I also asked Betty what she loves and remembers about Brian and Christy.
Brian's always been easygoing and very outgoing, very sociable. They're both easy kids, got along well. Christy was a little more temperamental. She'd be sent to her bedroom because she'd be naughty, and she'd lay on the floor and kick the bedroom door until we let her out. Family is important. He's your brother. She's your sister. I remember a family home evening. I was trying to teach that we had to have boundaries and rules, probably because someone needed at the time, I don't know what. So I set up the popcorn popper in the middle of the living room on a sheet and just put the popcorn in and let it pop all over the floor. And I said, "Now, you want to eat that?" And, oh. I said, "That's why you have boundaries, to keep things where they're supposed to be. That's why we have rules, because we need structure in our lives so that we can be really good and enjoyable." We were really excited when we had family home evenings.
Along with raising Brian and Christy, Betty and Doug stepped in to help raise their nieces.
Nancy had ulcerated colitis, and she'd had it almost all of her life. And she was able to get married, and she had four kids. When she was sick, her daughter Julie came and stayed with us. She was in junior high then, and she stayed with us for a year. And Shirley had Jennifer with husband and then remarried, and had Tamara and Lena. The twins were little, and Doug and I, she asked us to be their guardians, so we raised the twins. They were in elementary school. Brian was gone. I think he was married then, but Christy was still here. It was fun because they were characters. They liked to put a blanket or a sheet on the floor and get on one on each end, and then they'd roll together. They liked to trade because they were identical twins. They tried to fool their friends. They were very outgoing kids, so they had a lot of friends. And so we had a lot of teenagers in our house then. Parties in the yard, that kind of stuff. They were good kids. But it was fun. It was hard, too. They were very close. And I think having lost their mom made them closer. But they were our kids, just like Brian and Christy were our
Betty
kids.
Betty would say that these days have become much more quiet, especially since losing her sweetheart, Doug. But she maintains a positive perspective that they will be together again someday.
Being a widow's hard, and there are lonely nights. But most of the time, I know we're going to be together, so that makes it easier. He had a disease called polycythemia vera.
It's a blood disease.
Very, very rare. And they didn't expect him to live as long as he did. Actually, we were very blessed. We received a blessing from our stake president, Bailey Sainsbury, that promised him that as long as he served the Lord, he would be blessed with good health. And we had a calling to be over the stake farm, and we turned it down. And I keep thinking back, if we had accepted it, would he still be here? When he called us, I can't even remember who it was now that called us from the stake presidency, we just looked at each other, and Doug and I burst out laughing. It was the funniest thing. Stake farm, us. I said, "I can't even grow weeds very good." But after that, when he started going downhill. At first, he wasn't too bad, but then got worse. We had to have a hospital bed in.
It was hard for about the first month. Was really hard. Didn't want to go to church, didn't want to see people, just wanted to be here. And then I decided one day that it isn't what Doug would want.
Since then, and all throughout her life, Betty has been so dedicated to helping others and serving however she can. That's included many, many church callings.
I'm a visiting teacher, was Stake Relief Society president at one time. At that time, I don't know how it worked, but I know President Jones, who was our stake president, was over our area. And so I would meet with other stakes, stake relief societies, with President Jones. That was a fun service. I do know the church is true. I firmly believe that Doug and I will be together again. I will be with my family, my sisters, Dad. I'm grateful for the gospel and for that promise, for the blessings of the temple that holds those promises and keeps them. I'm so grateful for the friends I've had growing up, the way I grew up, my parents, their guiding influence in my life. I'm so grateful for Doug. I miss him a lot, but I have a good family. I have good kids, good grandkids, and great grandkids. And that's something to be proud of. There's no point in dwelling on the past, and who knows what the future is going to be, so enjoy what you've got today. It's just, that's the way it is. I could be sad and depressed that Doug's gone or whatever. My parents are gone. I'm an orphan, but just enjoy what I've got while I've got it. Today is the first day of the rest of my life. And no matter what comes, enjoy it, because every day is a blessing. And there are blessings within the blessing of every day. I don't know. It's just, you could be negative or downtrodden, but why? I've been blessed with too many blessings to be discouraged or downtrodden, I guess is a good word. I've been blessed with two wonderful kids, and I've been blessed with a good family. Been blessed to be able to raise other kids and have good friends. Very special.
As you've heard, Betty is an incredible example of loving others and loving the Lord. She's dedicated her entire life to raising her family and serving those around her. And with all of the ups and downs that life brings, she's been able to look back with gratitude for all that she's been blessed with. A huge thank you to Brian Brown for making this episode possible, and also a huge thank you to Betty for being interviewed. If there's someone that you would like to have featured on Hearing Our Heritage, email hearingourheritage@gmail.com or visit our website, hearingourheritage.com.